So welcome. I know that this is going to be an engaging conversation, and I'm really excited for us to dig in, but let me just do some quick introductions of myself and our thought leader here, and we'll get started. So I'm Jody Wertheim. I am the global communications leader for DePuy Synthes, which is part of the Johnson & Johnson family of companies. I'm your MC for today's breakout session. Johnson & Johnson is so proud to be a partner of the Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and California conferences for women for the last 5 years, supporting events that offer tools and inspiration to help you make your mark. At Johnson & Johnson, we aspire to achieve gender equality at all levels, in all sectors of our business, and across all functions around the world. Advancing women advances our business and allows us to unleash our full potential to not only compete in the healthcare industry of tomorrow, but to work together to help people around the world live longer, healthier lives today. So let me say thank you. I'm truly honored to be a part of this panel, and I'm thrilled to participate in Outspoken, Amplify Your Voice. This session is one that's personally close to my heart. As a female communicator, I'm eager to hear the perspectives of this brilliant panel on a topic that is so timely for today. We have an amazing hour in store for you guys. So I'm honored to introduce Veronica Rickard. She's a communications expert and author of the book Outspoken, Why Women's Voices Get Silenced and How to Set Them Free. She is a Peabody Award-winning communications specialist and coach, helping her clients discover the power of their voices and bring joy to the act of speaking. I should have talked to you before I came up here, right? She was the host of Wisconsin Public Radio's statewide news magazine and her own statewide call-in program. She's been a senior producer and contributor to Public Radio International and has had her essays aired on NPR and PRI. She's bound to provide us with insights and ideas that will help us all set our voices free. So please welcome Veronica Rickard.
Thank you so much. I am delighted to be here. And Jody, thank you. That was a beautiful welcome. It was. I think all of us are thinking of Megan right now and feeling what if. But it's wonderful to be here, and I'm so happy to talk to you about being outspoken today. And I want to start by asking you a question that you may have never really considered deeply and fully before. But the way that you answer this question has the power, I believe, to shape your life. So the question is, do you love your voice? And before you answer that question, I want to ask you, is the answer more about how you sound on an answering machine? You know, when we talk on an answering machine, we all cringe inside and a part of us dies. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is having a positive, nourishing, loving relationship with your voice. So as you ponder that part of the question, let's see a show of hands. How many of you in this room love your voice? I see you. Good. Oh my gosh, you guys are better than the earlier session, and there was a full room that day. So congratulations, that's wonderful. And for the rest of you, I have a message too, and that message is, it's not your fault if you didn't raise your hand, and it's not too late. So we'll talk about that, how to kind of turn the wheel on that relationship. And you're probably wondering, okay, hey, why does this matter? Why do I have to love my voice? And the answer is, if you don't love it and have a positive relationship with it, at the very least, you're not going to want to use it. You're not going to feel as inclined to share it and grow within yourself that kind of entitlement. And I think entitlement in this case is good, the entitlement to be heard, to speak, to be listened to. So all of that comes together. And if you did raise your hand, and a lot of you did, so thank you, you have a job too. Because making room, clearing the way for other voices, it's really a team sport. And so when we put too much on the backs of one individual and say, fix yourself, do this differently, change this, tweak this, and then you'll be heard, that's too much. Because we don't live in vacuums. We work in communities, in business cultures, in homes, in families, in societies. So this really takes everybody. So there's room for you, too, to help clear the way for other voices. So, you know, if you're a manager, you can start thinking about that. How can I clear the way for voices? How can I invite those voices in? How can I make room for them? And if that's something you've never thought about before, I invite you to start thinking about that, because there's room on both sides for this to happen. And so back to why you might not have raised your hand. You might not have raised your hand because it's really hard for women to love their voices right now. We're starting to talk about it, and we're starting to have data about it. That's the other thing. So before, we might have just thought, okay, I voiced my feelings at a meeting, I got shut down, I feel bad, and I'm going to slink away, and it's just me. There's something wrong with me. But now we know there is a phenomenon which has been sort of explained under the word speaking well female. And it's real. There is pushback. So let me tell you about some of this. A study out of Yale found that CEOs who were women, who spoke more than their peers, were rated as 14% less competent than male CEOs who did the same. So basically what we're hearing here is male CEOs who talked more than their peers, their competency rating went up by 10%. Women's went down. So in other words, women are talking more and they're getting penalized for it. There's this perception that somehow the female CEO is not as entitled to talk as the male CEO is entitled to talk. So another one. This one still, every time I talk about this one, it still blows my mind a little bit. So this one's out of Northwestern University School of Law, and they wanted to check out women with power. So where did they go to look for power? They went to the United States Supreme Court, and they asked, so if a woman holds an immense amount of power, will she be granted a kind of immunity from interruptions? Because we know that interruptions are a problem, especially for women who are interrupted more than anybody else. And they looked at years of oral arguments. And what do you think they found? Did women get immunity? No, they did not. They were interrupted 3 times as often as their male counterparts on the court. And we see this in Hollywood, too. According to an Annenberg School study, in a study of the 900 top grossing films, women spoke only a third of the time compared to men. And by the way, I also looked at some data from the movie Frozen, which I love. I have a 10-year-old daughter, I have a son. We love this movie, and it's princess-powered. And I felt really good about seeing it. It's about two princesses who decide, you know what, we love each other. That princess love, that sisterly love, is more important than a guy. Right? So that seems like it's super girl-powered, and kind of bucking this trend about finding Prince Charming. Well, men speak more of the time, even in Frozen. The two lead characters are women, and they still get to talk less, women in this film. So it's disappointing. And this is where we are right now. So again, if you didn't raise your hand, this is part of the reason why. We start to internalize these messages, and we realize that, hey, the cultural norm, the cultural preference, is for a silent woman. We prefer women to be small, and we still prefer women to be silent. And there's historical data there. I won't get into that now, but if you go digging, especially in literature, there's Shakespeare, there's Aristotle, Susan B. Anthony has talked about this. It's something that we're still grappling with today. And it reminds me of a story of a woman that I coached. Her name was Audrey. And Audrey got into the field of bank regulation. She watched the Great Recession unfolding, and she thought, oh, I could help. I could get in there. So she was quite young. She went back to school and got a master's degree, and then she got a job in the field of bank regulation. And she showed up on the first day of her job, and she was over the moon. Here she was. She was in this room. She had an all-male team. She was the only woman. And they were setting up camp in one of the conference rooms in this bank in the South. And the bank president walks in the room. He's got a couple folders in his hand. And he holds them up in the air, and he says, I've got the tax returns. Who wants first crack? And Audrey was so eager that she just bounced out of her seat. And she said, I will. I'll take him. And he stopped. And he looked her over, probably picking up on the fact that she was young. She was female. And he said to her, sweetheart, you don't know how. And in that moment, she froze. And she faced that question that so many of us face or have faced in our lives. Do I speak? Do I say something? Or do I remain silent? And she decided to stay silent. She turned completely red. She felt terrible. She felt shamed, but she never said anything in that moment. And she has regretted it every day since then. So she got promoted up and up and up in the field of bank regulation. But she told me she was always on the outside. It got to the point where when she had an idea, she gave it to a male colleague at the meeting so that they would put it on the board for her, because she felt if she brought it, it would get shut down. She told me about another female colleague in this industry who just stopped showing up to meetings because her voice just got shut down every time. Now, this is an extreme example, but Audrey left. She decided, I'm not being heard. I can't bust through. I'm busting my head against a wall. And so this is a real loss. This is an industry which lost someone who had a unique perspective, who had energy, who had skill, who had a lot of emotional intelligence. And she's really funny, too. She's super likable. She's not a wallflower, but she couldn't take it, so she left. She also butted up against one other thing, and that is she overheard one day a couple of colleagues telling her, talking about her and saying, Audrey's really great, but you kind of have to get past her voice. She has sexy baby voice. And so there she is on the line hearing this, going, oh my God, now this. So it was one more thing, another reason to dismiss her voice. And this isn't unique to bank regulation. It isn't unique to Audrey. These are things many of us have come across. A lot of the women in my workshops are there. Often there is something like that, something with Audrey, where you just feel you're not being listened to. Or maybe you've been told that your voice is somehow wrong, that it needs fixing. All of these things are part of the reason you may not have raised your hand. It's complicated, and it really goes deep. So today what I want to do is I want to challenge you to leave here and make a few changes. When you walk out the door, there should be things that you can try right away if you're interested in moving past that negative relationship and pulling the wheel in the other direction and really starting to feel that positive relationship with your voice, because it is a transformative one. And number one is take up more space. And so I mean that with your voice, and I mean that with your body. So as I started studying this, there are a lot of women and men sometimes who default into what I call the lady pretzel. And so what that is legs are crossed and arms are crossed, and it gets really tight. And so it starts to feel like you have a corset, and you start to talk a little bit like this because you just don't have the strength, because you're not being able to give your body a deep enough breath. So since we're a small group, we're not wedged in here like sardines, let's try it. Can everybody lady pretzel up? Legs crossed, arms crossed, tight, 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 small, small, small. And while you're in that position, try to take a nice, deep, low breath that's going to make your voice strong and help calm your mind. Okay. You can achieve it, right? It's not like you're going to pass out, but it can be pretty tense. Okay, so now unwrap, unpretzel. Shoulders are back. Feet are flat on the floor. And this is where my training as an opera singer comes in. This stuff works. It's really magic. Okay, feet are flat on the floor. Chest is expanded to receive that breath. And the breath comes in low. Take a nice low breath that goes all the way down almost to the juncture of the hips and the thigh. Guy, you look great, I have to tell you. You look really different right now. Okay, how did that feel? Raise your hand if you felt better in the first one. One, two, three, four. Okay, how about the other way? Five. Okay, you're outvoted. Right. So it really does make a difference. And also, by the way, if you're wearing some of that kind of scary military-grade underwear that sucks you in, that also doesn't help. And I'm not saying don't wear it. I'm not saying burn your Spanx. But I am saying if you can choose between your voice and your underwear, choose your voice. That's going to be on a t-shirt someday. So think about that. When you have something to say, when you have a big day, you're in a clutch moment, you need to speak, you need to count on your voice, come taking up more space. And this taking up more space, okay, it's your body, like we just talked about. And by the way, that deep, low breath that you just practiced, that does something else that's pretty amazing. It calms the mind. So if anyone in here is prone to stage fright, you get fight or flight, you feel like a tiger is charging you on the savanna, it's really, really unpleasant. I've had it before. This can help. This deep, low breathing, particularly if you lengthen the exhalation, can calm the mind and engage the parasympathetic nervous system so that you stay calm. So you're choosing your voice. And I hope you'll also choose to speak. So in those moments, when you could sit back, you're listening to a conversation, maybe it's at work, maybe it's at home in your domestic life and people are debating something, making a decision. Instead of demurring, instead of sitting back, choose to try out your voice, because your voice, it's your sense of agency. It's this whetstone to sharpen your will and your sense of who you are. Your voice is precious. It's infinitely precious. And as Michelle Obama said, and this is a beautiful, beautiful quote that I love, she said, "I've had to learn that my voice has value. And if I don't use it, what's the point of being in the room?" So all of you here today, I hope you learn, if you don't already know it, I hope you learn that your voice has value. And that value lies in using it, in using it. So see if you can turn the dial up. So 30%, if you can talk 30% more than you do if you're used to hanging back. And see where that takes you. The other thing I'd like is for you to develop a toolkit for the voice. So to have some things in your back pocket. If you have an idea and you really want to voice it and it's now or never, and you're sitting there and you're listening to the conversation and it's really fast, it's bada bing, bada bing, and you can't get in because it's double Dutch jump rope and it seems impossible to get your voice in, I'd like you to learn how to interrupt. And I'd like you to practice it. It is learnable. It's doable, and you don't have to do it every day. I know some of you were raised thinking, hey, it's rude to interrupt, or it's rude to hold your ground when someone's trying to interrupt you. But I'd like you to practice it. This is another tool that has the power to change your life, because sometimes you do need to talk. Sometimes you do need to get your voice in there. And sometimes if you don't speak at exactly that moment, you will never say the thing you need to say. And I don't want you to feel like that. It's important. So there are techniques. It's teachable. I teach them in my book, Step by Step, and you can practice at home. You can practice with your family. You can practice with your friends. I'm not saying they're going to like it, but you can do it, and then you can bring it into the workplace. You need to listen for that opening. You have to wait until someone does what everyone has to do eventually, no matter how loquacious they are. They have to take a breath. And you're listening for that breath. And when they take a breath or they pause, you slice in. And you slice in with precision and confidence and authority. And when you have the floor, you go. You go, you say your thing. I teach a particular phrase that I think works particularly well because it gets really hard to keep talking when someone is saying these percussive, broken, record-sounding things in your ear. I use, "I'm gonna jump in." So it becomes, I'm gonna jump in. I've used this on senators. I've used this on runaway interviews who just didn't know how to stop. It's very useful, and it works almost every time. And it's scary. I acknowledge it is a little scary. Even Madeleine Albright, right, former Secretary of State, said, to this day, she says, "I get a squirm of anxiety when I interrupt in a room full of men." So I recognize this is something new. It's something a little scary, but it's also part of the toolkit you need to have. And finally, I would ask you to take your voice out for a spin. Get to know it. This is part of loving it and using it. So it's really like having a Stradivarius violin, these precious ancient violins that nobody knows how to make anymore. They were made by Italian craftsmen, and they have these unparalleled acoustics. So it's like you have one of these in your attic, but you never take it out. You never learn how to play it. So my hope is that you learn how to play it. And by that, I mean experiment with it. If you feel like you have to talk in a little tiny box, throw that out the window. You can explore, you can play, you can use, you can inflect up higher when you get excited. There's some interest there. The voice hears that, the ear hears that and wants to listen. If you're feeling grave and there's solemnity, you can take the voice down to a lower pitch. If you're feeling intense and you want people to listen, sometimes being quiet is incredibly effective. Or if you want to project to the back of the room, that's something you should be able to do. That's where that breathing we talked about will help you as well. So it's this incredible instrument. So take it out, start playing with it. And if you're worried, by the way, that it sounds weird, you should know that, in general, people like more inflection. They like it when you talk with your hands, and they like a voice that's interesting to listen to. But the main thing here is use it. Start using it, and along the way, I hope that you like it, and you even, hopefully, one day love it. Thank you. And I want to introduce our incredibly accomplished panel. I'm so lucky to have them here today. I'm going to start with Bernice Kramer, who is here closest to me. Bernice is the director of marketing for Bose's Professional Systems Division. She's an accomplished product and brand leader with a substantial career in consumer technology. Before Bose, she held positions with Plantronics and Polaroid, and she started her career with Canon in Japan. She spent a lot of time in her career in Japan, and we'll hear more about that. Michelle King is next to Bernice. Michelle is a leading global expert in gender and organizations. She currently leads UN Women's Global Innovation Coalition for Change, which focuses on leveraging innovation and technology to accelerate the achievement of gender equality and women's empowerment. She's an advisory board member for Girl Up, the United Nations Foundation's Adolescent Girl Campaign, and she's the host of the weekly podcast called The Fix. And next to Michelle, we have Aria Mia Loberti, an undergraduate honor student at the University of Rhode Island. She's triple majoring in philosophy, communication studies, and political science, with minors in ancient Greek and rhetoric. She's an advocate for gender equality and disability rights, particularly for people who, like she, are blind or visually impaired. Her activism has led her to the UN and UN Women as a delegate speaker and Outstanding Youth Award recipient. Alongside her guard dog, who you see right there, Ingrid, Liberty has traveled the world sharing her story of resilience and optimism in the face of adversity. Welcome to all of you, and thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it. And Bernice, I want to start with you because you have worked in two very male-dominated spheres. One is the technology world, and the other is the country of Japan. So I'm curious, how did you make sure that your voice was heard when you were working in these male-dominated spheres?
Great question. So I had a piece of luck when I was young and I was working in Japan, which is that I was put into an extreme situation. And this was many years ago. I was living in Japan. I was a young woman. At that time, at least, I think still pretty much today, Japan was very, very male-dominated, and so male-dominated that there's just not a lot of question, right? So when you say, how are women's voices heard, I mean, It's not even a polite veneer of we'll listen to you. I mean, it's just you're sort of dismissed. And on top of that, what happened was I was working for Canon, then I left Canon, and with two friends we started a company, which was a marketing consulting company. Well, it happened that one of the other people was a Japanese woman and me, two women. The other person was a guy. The two of us were both pregnant at the same time. Now, if you've lived in Japan or if you know anything about Japan, particularly at that time, pregnancy was considered a kind of a disability, and not only a disability, but it was considered somewhat shameful, right? So you really weren't supposed to go out in public when you were pregnant. It was kind of embarrassing. And it's so pervasive that, for example, at least at that time, they believed that women shouldn't ride in cars when they're pregnant because the jostling of the car might harm the baby. So, I mean, that's how much they wanted you at home, right? So here's this woman and I, we're co-partners in this company, small company, we're trying to get off the ground, right? So what are we supposed to do? I mean, we had employees, we had 25 employees whose livelihoods depended on us, right? What are we supposed to do? We're supposed to go home? You know, stay in the office? We can't. We had to go out and sell business. And so we just said, you know what? We're just going to go. And so we went and we called on companies. We made pitches to them and we used to joke. Nobody ever turned us down when we went in. Both of us were like out like this because they were afraid something bad might happen to the baby if they said no. But you know what? So what? Right? That's their problem. If they think there's something wrong with us or that we shouldn't be out selling business or we shouldn't be out you know, in public doing this, that's their problem. That's not our problem. We're going to do our business. If we're not good at what we do, we won't keep the account. I mean, you wouldn't, you know, you might get it because people were a little sympathetic, but you're not going to keep the account unless you're actually good at what you do. But just go ahead and do it. And we finally said, you know what? It's if they think there's something wrong with us, it's their problem. We're going to go ahead and do it. And that was such a great lesson for me that, you know, if somebody doesn't want women to speak or doesn't want me to speak, it's not my problem, actually. It's their problem, right? And it's fine. I can go ahead and say what I need to say. So I was lucky to have that lesson in the beginning. Technology companies, not the same as working in Japan. It's, you know, often a lot more men, you know, in a lot more engineers, right? Especially if you're not a man, if you're not an engineer, you know, sometimes it's a little bit harder to get taken seriously, but you just go for it. You just do it and say what you need to say. And don't worry about it. That's the lesson that I was taught by this extraordinary circumstance that I was placed in when I was very young. So.
And you carried that with you throughout your entire career, it sounds like.
You just learn the lesson, you know, because once you break through it, you're through, right? I mean, it's kind of like Megan Rapinoe. Once you decide, you know, what she was saying about the tweets from Trump, you know, she said, this doesn't matter, you know. Mm-hmm. She just went ahead and did it. Once you realize you break through and it doesn't matter, you just keep going. That's all.
Great. Well, thank you for that story. And Michelle, I want to ask you, I was talking earlier about how this is not just a job for women and how women need to improve how they communicate so they can be heard. This is a job for managers and leaders and a group of people who can support that workplace culture that is friendly, that is conducive to hearing all people's voices. So could you talk a little bit about what those people, those managers, those leaders, those people who are influencers in workplace culture, what can they do to make a safe space for all voices?
Yeah, so a bit of a confession, I am firmly in the camp of fixing workplaces and not women. And there's many reasons for this. I've spent many years actually researching the issue of gender inequality in organizations and the challenges that it creates for women throughout their careers and the challenges that it creates for men. And when you look at sort of the barriers that women encounter day to day, they're pretty systemic and they continue throughout your careers. And something as simple as communication, you know, being interrupted, having your sort of perspective devalued, being talked over, not being heard in meetings, those slight sort of what we call microaggressions day to day create tremendous challenges for women, and fundamentally they exist because workplaces don't value men and women in the same way. Workplaces are sort of hardwired to support and advance a masculine ideal standard, right? So if you think of an ideal worker in organizations, you tend to think of this masculine standard, right? So, and that's been around as long as workplaces have. So think leaders, you think male. And the problem is that creates a lot of challenges for women when it comes to things like communicating, because we simply don't value what women have to say in the same way that we do men. And so for me, when I look at organizations and how you tackle this issue, it's great to give women strategies, but fundamentally we want to create work environments where anybody, regardless of your voice or the tone or what you look like, is heard and your contribution is valued based on what you have to say. And that is what we call a culture of equality. So an environment where we value difference, we value people showing up differently. And that is something that is every leader's job. You know, I always say that equality is an invitation for leaders to lead, because it's an opportunity for leaders to create environments that enable everybody to succeed. And that environment exists. It is possible. There's a lot of research that's looked at this. And it's something that every leader can do by understanding what the barriers are that women are going to face. So in this case, communication. When a woman is interrupted or when a woman's contribution is devalued, calling that out and managing it in the moment. Like, equality is a practice. It's a lot like safety or, you know, any other practice we have in organizations. It's something that leaders need to do. So I think too often leaders are simply unaware of the challenges that women experience. And I know this through my own research when I've asked them, and they've said, you know, women don't face any challenges, you know. So for me, it's really educating leaders on, hey, you know, these are some of the difficulties we're encountering, just purely from a comms perspective in this case. But, you know, there are many barriers throughout women's careers. And so once leaders know, it's really holding them accountable for creating an environment that values women and men in the same way.
That's great. And I want to come back and ask you a little bit about vocal fry and how that's perceived, at least in this country and the people that I've come across. But first, I want to go to Aria. And Aria, ask you about what we've been talking about here, because this isn't a 9-to-5 issue only. This is an all-the-time issue. And I'm curious what you think, in your experience, how individuals themselves can become advocates for themselves, but also become advocates for other people. What advice do you have for us?
Well, as you might imagine by my list of majors and my background in college, while I do hold a couple of jobs to support my education, I'm not in a workplace 9-to-5, like I'm sure a majority perhaps in this room are. But I have found that I've had this training from a very young age to do exactly what you're saying, and to not so much treat the way the world around me the same way that one of you may treat your workplace, but that the world is sort of a macrocosm of what we see there. The one thing you should know about me is that I really like to name drop and quote philosophers and Harry Potter. So I'll start out with one of my favorites, Simone de Beauvoir, who says, and I paraphrase, something along the lines of, you are not born, but you become a woman. And I often, because I do a lot of research in philosophy, especially in this type of idea, the philosophy of identity, I can easily transfer Beauvoir's ideas to disability. Before I had Ingrid, I used to give this really interesting introduction about the storytelling of this imaginary girl who had these abilities with her eyes, and now that I have her, it just totally gives it away, so I'm not going to share that with you. But as you have gathered, as Veronica told you, I cannot see the same way you can. I have very limited vision. And from a young age, I realized, just like Beauvoir tells us, that, you know, I wasn't necessarily born with a disability. It's a genetic condition. My eyes have been the same way. They haven't changed. But what does change is my perception of the world around me, the way I notice people interacting with me. And through those interactions, through the mediated messages I receive, I became that identity. So not only did I grow into the identity of what it means to be a woman in the 21st century U.S., especially in the Northeast, but I grew into the identity of what does it mean to be a person with a disability and a woman specifically. So when I was about 3 or 4, I really can't remember how old, I mean, I've been doing this advocacy work for literally as long as I can remember, because my rights were being taken away from me at a very young age. In the public school setting, the school district would struggle to accommodate me. Although the law is there, and, you know, it's beautiful. The law is there. It's there to protect us, but people don't know it, or they want to challenge it because they don't think we deserve that protection. And what do I have at my disposal? I had two things. One thing I think is something you can cultivate on your own, and the other, I think, unfortunately, has to come from all of us. It can't be from the individual. But I had these two very important things. The first thing is what we've been talking about this whole time, the ability to have a voice. I realized, you know, when I was 4, what do I have? Not much power. Like, I don't even have height at that point. My vocabulary wasn't fabulous, but what do I have? I have a voice. When I was 7 and I was told that there was no point in me learning math because I'm a girl and I'm blind and what the heck am I going to do with it? What did I have? I had a voice and I had my brain. So slowly I started to build up this progression of advocacy, changing for myself, but the countless other people who are being told, no, sit down and, if I may, shut up. This is something that we think of as happening in perhaps the developing world, that educational rights are not something that we have in the U.S., but this is something I've lived and something that has allowed me to develop that strength and power that all of you have in your ability to capture that in the workplace and in your career and your lives with the people you interact with. The second component that I had that I want to challenge all of you to embrace today is allyship. Because no matter how loudly you speak up, no matter how powerful your voice is, no matter if you find yourself sitting in a room like this in front of all of you or at the UN or, you know, in front of a room full of my peers at college, if you don't have allies, nothing is going to happen. But the thing about all of us gathering in a space like this is we have the potential and the power to be allies for other people. So whether that is, you know, for myself, trying to be an ally for women of color because I recognize that they are facing a lot of the same challenges that I am as a person with a disability, as being doubly marginalized, I want to embrace that. And I challenge you to step up for that as well. I'm very nervous that she's going to fall off the stage. I'm very sorry. And, you know, she is one of my best allies, so falling off the stage would not be fabulous. The best allies that I've had have been my parents, and some of you may be parents. And I invite you to look at this from the perspective of parenthood. It's not a perspective I possess, but if I could embarrass my mom for a second, who's sitting in front of me somewhere in this vicinity, you know, my mom and dad were the people who allowed me to have that voice, because if I didn't have them standing up for me when the world was telling me to sit down and shut up, I probably would have.
Aria, thank you for that. Michelle, I want to go back to you, and you were talking about how equality is a practice in work, and I was thinking about the story I shared about how Audrey overheard her colleague saying she had sexy baby voice, and I have had people in my work coaching women and working with women and their voices in public speaking, they've said to me, I have vocal fry, and I've been told that that is bad, people don't want to hear it, and other people have told me that they literally subtract IQ points when they hear someone with vocal fry. And I don't want to throw terms around that we don't all know. Does anyone not know what vocal fry is? Okay, vocal fry is a vocal mannerism that was presumably popularized in this country by the Kardashians, right, as all things are. And the idea is that it's sort of this low glottal sound in the throat that is particularly used by young women, so it sounds a little like this. Hey, how's it going? So it's supposed to sound like bacon sputtering in a pan. That's the idea. That's why it's called vocal fry, and it's something that older generations especially seem to find, men and women, seem to find unpalatable, and it seems to be working against young women in the workplace. At least it still seems to be active, at least from what I've seen. Are we talking enough about that, about, you know, dismissing people simply based on the way that they sound, the quality of their voice?
Yeah, so there are studies on this, right, that show we associate, this is an amazing study that shows that we associate, because of this ideal worker that we have in our minds, right, this masculine being the standard for what good looks like in workplaces, when we hear a high-pitched voice, we immediately are turned off by it because we delegitimize it. We see it as not a serious voice to pay attention to. It's noisy. Unfortunately, women tend to have higher pitched voices on average than men. So if I was adopting the Fix the Woman school of thought, I would say to all of you, talk in a really low voice, you know, and try and get people to listen. I don't believe that is the future of work. I don't believe it's the future of equality to suddenly ask everybody to lower the tone in their voice. I mean, sure, there's strategies all of you can use, right, to be more effective communicators. But in the process of self-development, my message, because it's based on all this research that I've done on this, you know, women are highly effective communicators. Research shows we're excellent in terms of collaboration, in terms of, you know, networking, in terms of how we support team members, management, leadership. Women are phenomenal in terms of a lot of aspects of what actually good does look like in organizations. So if you're going to look at how you improve your communication, do it from a place of strength. Do it from a place of understanding that actually you are good enough. And you work in environments that, no matter how low your tone is, you are likely to be devalued and, you know, have your contribution dismissed. So it's not you, it's actually your workplace. And the job is not to spend hours really fixing yourself. The job is to really try and understand what the barriers are that you're going to encounter, how you navigate them, and more importantly, calling them out when they happen, particularly for peers in terms of allyship. I mean, that is something all of us can do. If you see a woman being dismissed and devalued, call it out. And the thing that makes this so important for women, I mean, I think men have a huge role to play in this, but the thing that makes it so important for women is understanding, you know, how these barriers show up differently for women of color. So that's not something we've talked about yet, but when it comes to communication, you know, studies show women of color are far more likely to have their contributions devalued or dismissed, far more likely to face isolation, far more likely to endure microaggressions on a day-to-day basis. And the reason this matters is it takes a toll. So psychologically, you know, if you're constantly being bombarded with messages that you need to fix yourself and lower your tone and talk in this way, so that's a lot to grapple with, you know, just even communicating normally. And then if you do all of that and you have your contribution still dismissed, you start to think like, man, what's wrong with me? I must just be terrible at this. Like, I'm no good at this. I can't, you know. And, you know, research shows that women within 2 years of working in an organization, 2 years, their confidence in terms of their ability to advance to senior leadership roles drops from 43% down to 16%. And men's remains the same. And the reason for that is the more time you spend in organizations, the more messages you're getting of all the things you need to do to change, and none of that works, and you're encountering all these challenges day to day, and you start to think it's you. So my message is, it's not you. You actually have everything you need to succeed. You can develop the way you communicate for it to be more effective, but do that based in terms of, I'm developing what I'm already good at, not from some sort of deficiency place where you're fundamentally changing who you are and you're speaking in some sort of weird low tone, because I've seen that happen before and it's very odd. So, you know, just do it from a place of strength and understand that, yeah, you're going to encounter these challenges at work, so you're going to be an advocate. When you see it happen to someone else, you're going to call it out. And hey, if it happens to you and you feel like you've got enough sort of confidence to call it out, call it out. But I think the challenge is, you know, we often go through organizations blindly, not even aware of some of the barriers we're going to encounter. And I think that denial is really, really the thing we need to tackle.
Great. Thank you for that. And I want to start now thinking about the tools we have. We've been hitting on some of them already, but what kind of tools might we use? We can do a lightning round here. Bernice, what do you think we should take with us to present ourselves as allies for other people and to clear way for our own voice when maybe we don't have that ally in the room? What can we do?
So definitely allies are a huge thing, and they don't have to be other women. I mean, they can be a lot of different people. But my most important, I think, takeaway comes from Hamilton, right? Which is, don't give away your shot, right? Mm-hmm. If you have something to say, just don't give up. Don't give up. Just keep at it. And even if you're being interrupted, even in one meeting it doesn't come out, don't walk away and let that fall. Just, you have the right to say what you want to say. You're in the room because you should be in the room. Say what it is that you need to say. And sometimes you need to go around and you can't get it out in a meeting and you have to go around and do it one-on-one with somebody later. Bring it back up. But don't give up. Mm-hmm. Don't give away your shot. That's basically it.
Beautiful. Thanks. That's really great to hear. And Aria, what about you? What would you tell us?
I think it's perhaps the most powerful to be able to sit in a room of people or go about your day-to-day life. And, you know, a lot of us are aware of what our weaknesses or our faults might be. I hazard a guess that, you know, at least one or two of you may have walked into this room and noticed the dog or heard that I was blind or whatnot, and we're like, okay, you maybe use the word disability to describe that. I've used the word disability to describe that. Or perhaps used the word that perhaps this is a weakness that I've had to overcome or something that I might suffer from. In reality, whether it's something that's maybe a bit more impactful on your day-to-day life, like not having the operational use of one of your senses, or maybe it's something like those insecurities that we all have, we can flip those things around, those disabilities, if you will, whatever they might be, into strengths and into sources of power. So my ability to see the world differently transcends more than just my vision. It turns into, you know, a way I live my life, the way I perceive what is around me, so that I've flipped it and turned it into a strength. And secondarily, to sort of tag on to the end of what Bernice said, and again, I told you I was going to quote Harry Potter. There's a quote from Dumbledore: "It does not do to dwell on dreams and forget to live." So please, whatever it is you want to accomplish, do not sit around and wait for people to give you the chance to do it. Just go and do it. And don't listen to the people who say that you don't deserve to be sitting here or wherever you choose to sit, wherever you want to take that stand. Do it for yourself. Make that available to you. You're the only source of power for it.
Veronica. Thank you.
I want to give Michelle a chance to answer that question, but I also, while Michelle is answering the question, want to welcome those of you who have questions to please start lining up at the mic so that we can give all of you an opportunity to speak to this amazing panel.
Great. So in response to this, my main message to everybody who's here today is get to know the barriers that you're likely to encounter in your workplace. So communication is just one example. You know, my research and the work that I've done in my book outlines the 17 barriers that you're likely to encounter throughout your careers. Understand how that's different for all women, right? So in communications, we've got one example of, you know, how that shows up differently. The second thing I would advise everybody to do is understand how these barriers are going to show up in your workplace and how they've shown up in your career and the impact that's had on you. So when you do that, you start to take back some power in terms of understanding that, hey, it's not me, it's my workplace. And the last piece is, you know, once you have this awareness and you have this understanding, it's important to take action. So on that allyship piece, you know, if you see a female colleague being interrupted and she walks out the meeting and says, man, I totally messed that up, like, point it out. Like, no, actually, that's not what happened. This is what happened. Don't worry, it's not you. Like, this is your workplace. And you will see such a transformative effect in terms of your own confidence when that happens. I've worked with so many women whose the light bulb moment goes on, and it's like, wow, you know, I've spent so much time thinking that it really was me. And that's had a massive detrimental impact in terms of the years and hours I've spent developing myself and fixing myself. And I know this better than anybody. I mean, I've been forever at university, you know, trying to do more and be better and go on every development course and attend every women's networking event and, you know, all in this attempt to try and overcome barriers that I actually had no hand in creating. So I think it's really important to liberate women by raising this awareness and understanding and take action.
That's good.
Awesome. Thank you all. This has been a terrific discussion. I hate to be the one to break it up because I think it go on for so much longer. But so please, if you have questions, I certainly want all of you to use the tools that we've talked about today and feel like you can be outspoken. So we have a question over here.
Yes. My question is continuing about the type of voice that you have. I've been told sometimes giving presentations that I'm not projecting my voice loud enough. And heard some feedback about my voice being a little bit too young. And so I was just wondering, you mentioned about breathing as a skill I can try to improve. But I was wondering if you've had clients similarly with this type of voice and some tools that I can use to project my voice louder in those certain situations which calls for it.
Right, so my first question to you, well, let me start with a statement. A, I think your voice is lovely. B, B is, if you're talking about change and you're asking me for tools, is this change coming from you? So I teach and I firmly believe that if someone is coming in from the outside and saying, you sound too young, you sound not strong enough, your voice is too high, and they're pressuring you to change, that's not a positive place to begin a relationship of change with your voice. If it is coming from you, and I do have clients who say, I feel this power inside, and I'm moving into leadership positions, but when I talk, I don't hear that power reflected, and I feel like there's a disconnect between who I am and how I sound, I want to change it. Then we work on changing it because that's being motivated from within. It's their choice and it's coming from a place of personal power. So I think that's the real question you have to ask yourself is where is it coming from? If you yourself feel, hey, my voice isn't as strong in these situations and I do feel personal power, I do want to change it, there's a lot you can do to work with the breath. So those breaths that we were talking about, your diaphragm supports your vocal instrument, and the more you can use this instrument from the diaphragm and support here, not from here, so there's a lot of people push from the throat, so that's difficult, and a lot of people don't support, and then you get kind of a breathier voice when it's like that if you're not supporting. So those are some things that you could work on. I teach a very simple exercise in the beginning. One hand on the belly, one hand here, and blowing out candles so that my hand is going to bounce a little. And once you've done that, you can start vocalizing, and that can start bringing more strength to the voice. You get used to using these muscles below. So if that's something that you choose to do, but think carefully about it, and think about, you know, where your range is. If you've been told your voice is too high, is that where your voice lies when it's healthy and happy? If it is, don't touch it, because you can actually damage your voice by pushing it lower than it should be. So it's a complicated thing, and honestly, it takes some looking into, you know, how do I feel about my voice? Where did that relationship come from? Did someone tell me it was wrong when I was really young? And it really is kind of like peeling an onion and figuring out what the core of it is and how does your voice reflect you. So again, I think your voice is beautiful and I think you deserve to be listened and heard no matter what. If you want to change, empower yourself. Don't do it in response to someone else and go forward and, you know, change that relationship with love.
Thank you. It became more relevant to me just based on feedback. I was going through a certification program and teaching back a certain part of the module. And it was a room of about maybe 15 of us. And I got the feedback that it was hard for the people in the back to hear me. So hearing that a little bit more consecutively recently kind of perked my interest to see if maybe this is something that I just don't know about myself and for me to improve. Thank you very much.
Sure, you're welcome. Good luck. And I think the projection, that is something you can work on pretty easily, getting more strength. And that doesn't fundamentally change your voice. It just gives it more underpinning. Yeah.
So time is slipping away. I want to get to one more question.
So I have a relatively deep voice, and I can tell you that it doesn't matter. Still not heard. So, and it's been a huge challenge, and I think that I've just had to learn. Well, I've tried everything. I've tried everything. You know, okay, read everybody differently, right? So maybe that's what it is. I just have to kind of read the room, and then try to fit in somehow to be heard, but it hasn't really worked. So I really appreciated just that thought that it's not us, and it's, you know, really, you know, I do see a huge, I guess, difference generationally. So it excites me to see kind of a younger generation, men coming into management, and it's a huge difference. So I think that there is change coming about, but so I don't know if there are. What I'm told is having a deep voice is relax. So that's the response that I get. It isn't, you know, you need to speak up. It's that I need to be more quiet. So I don't know if you have any feedback on how to respond to that one.
This makes me laugh because this is just exactly the conundrum that women are in. And the problem is so research shows it takes sort of most of your career and trying all the different tactics to realize that actually nothing you do is going to sort of fundamentally ensure you'll be valued in the same way. If you work in an organization where leaders endorse, condone, ignore behaviors that marginalize or discriminate or exclude women, there is very little you can do to ensure you'll be valued. For me, this is fundamentally a leadership issue. What you can do is exactly what I've said, right? So is how you are now, where you're like, hey, you know what? This isn't me because I'm being told I need a deep voice. I have a deep voice. I'm speaking, and you're still not valuing me. So, you know, that's very freeing because suddenly, you know, I was speaking with the director at HBR about this today. It allows you to kind of ignore the humming. So in gender inequality, we talk about all these barriers and we talk about all these challenges like a humming that occurs in the background, a constant humming. And you're not humming, but you hear this humming and it's really annoying, right? It's every day, like speak up, talk louder, you know, get all these fix the women, all this noise. It's very distracting. It affects women's performance. It's really a very difficult thing that women have to overcome. And the problem is when you raise it, you get told, no, no, you're the one doing the humming. And you need to fix yourself and stop humming. And it's a form of gaslighting. So in order to ignore the humming and to free yourself, it starts with being aware that actually it's not your deep voice. It's not any of that. It's fundamentally gender inequality because outside of workplaces, we value men more than women. And so it makes total sense that when we walk into the organization, we carry those same values with us, right? And so to change that starts with recognizing what the problem is. And I think rather than sort of sitting there making yourself the problem and engaging in all these weird strategies to try and be different. Yeah.
I totally agree with what you said. And this was fundamentally the thing that happened for me in Japan was, okay, I'm never going to be Japanese. I'm never going to fit in. And I'm, you know, out to here pregnant. I mean, I'm never going to be accepted. Screw it, right? It's never going to be perfect. I'm just going to go ahead and do what I want to do. Yeah.
But I just want to say one important point, is that only allows you to survive in your workplace. And as a gender equality advocate, women deserve more. We deserve workplaces that enable us to thrive. And the great news, the great message about all of this, as negative as it sounds, is that in the future world of work, workplaces need difference, and they need to value difference to innovate, problem solve, and create. So we have a great opportunity. Like, the time has come where organizations with the disruptive technological changes that are coming cannot afford to not do anything. They need to create environments where if you have a squeaky voice or if you have a deep voice, or no matter what your voice is, we have to hear you because we need different perspectives to do the things that we need to do to survive the changes that are coming. So workplaces need us more than we do, and that's the great news about gender equality. It's like we all stand to benefit from this.
Well said.
Thank you guys so much for that. That was a great question to end on. I just want to say thank you to this amazing panel, Veronica, Bernice, Michelle, and Aria, and Ingrid, who was just really agreeable the whole time. So please, a round of applause for the panel. Veronica is signing books in the exhibit hall if you would like to meet her and get a copy of her book. Thank you all so much.